Welcome to Veins of the Illawarra, a podcast that examines the people and organisations that are the lifeblood of the Illawarra region. In this episode, I am delighted to introduce Shaz Harrison from Need a Feed. Welcome, Shaz.
Thank you very much, Travis, for having me.
It's great to have you on the podcast. Please tell us about Need a Feed's history in the region.
Well, Need a Feed actually started 13 years ago this month. So we're really proud of that achievement. It actually started out with my mum and I delivering food to people in need. And then I started to think, how am I actually going to find the people that need the service? So I made a call to Berkeley Neighbourhood Centre.
Yep.
And I spoke to Maria, who's the coordinator there. And I said to her, I really want to feed people. And I picked Berkeley because I know it's a bit of a tough part of town.
Yep.
So I spoke with her and she actually thought I was a scammer at first. She didn't really know why I wanted to do it. But I just said, you know, I just have this calling to feed people. And so that was our first Need a Feed distribution day at the Berkeley Neighbourhood Centre. And my goal was to give out 100 food gifts.
Yep.
And some drinks and also 100 chicken sandwiches because I thought, who doesn't love a fresh chicken sandwich? And it was a bit of a luxury, I thought, for people in need. So we provided the 100, but there was a few families that couldn't be there on the day. So Maria said to me, could we save a few and they'll pick it up the next day? So I thought, absolutely. Went back the next day, met the families, and they were working with Barnardo's. So that's when I thought, oh, that is how I will reach more people.
Yep.
By connecting with all the different services. So that was my light bulb moment. So from then, we started working with other organisations, other community centres and services. Now we work with around 30 different organisations. So we provide food to them to give to people that they're helping. And actually yesterday, we held our first mini service expo.
Yeah, I saw that on Instagram.
Yeah, it was so good. It was a great time. And there was around 12 different services. And we timed it for our community lunch. So every Thursday we hold our lunch. So it was so good to see everyone interacting. It was a safe and welcoming space. So people felt comfortable opening up and talking to the different services. So it was such a good day. But that's how it started, really. And since then, Need a Feed has won multiple awards recognising our community service. Our latest award is the City of Wollongong Community Group of the Year.
I saw that, and congratulations to you and the organisation.
Thank you very much. It was an absolute team effort. And there was 21 other organisations in our category. So we thought, they're all amazing, absolutely amazing. So I thought, you know, just to be here, it's one of those, just to be
yep.
there and connect with other people was amazing. And then when they called our name, it was one of those jaw drop moments. I was so proud of our team and it was such a great day.
When we talk about helping others, and I'll ask you later on about what drives you and what keeps driving you, but at that moment, 13 years ago, was there something happening in your life or you and your mum's life that you thought, I need to start this?
Well, I left school and studied nursing, so I've always had that helping nature. But the Need a Feed story actually started when I was 1 month old. And I'm adopted, so there was 1 month where my birth mother had 30 days to... She was a unmarried mother, so in the 70s it was really looked down upon
culturally.
And so I was in hospital for that month where I was just waiting in limbo for my parents, my adoptive new parents, to pick me up. And during that time I wasn't treated very well. I didn't have the human connection. I wasn't nurtured. I wasn't cuddled and loved like any baby or person really needs in that first part of their life. And when mum and dad came to pick me up, they my ear was folded in half. I was looking really ratty in the clothes that I had on, and there was actually a sign on my cot that said, "Feed me." So whether I knew it or not, it was my subconscious remembered all of that time. So that's what I say that it starts when I was started when I was 1 month old, because my subconscious didn't forget, you know. So now that's why I'm so passionate about human connection and sharing a meal and, you know, the family strong support network.
It's a hard situation that a lot of people have gone through because of the way society evolves and behaves, but yeah, you're right, some things are implanted in us at a very early age, and for you, extremely early.
Yeah, your subconscious doesn't forget.
No, definitely. What are the objectives of the organisation, and how do you help people in the Illawarra?
Well, we provide more than just food. It's what started off as me wanting to feed people has grown and changed so much over the time, and we're like family to everyone that attends our lunch and breakfast, and we feed the mind, body and soul. It's not just about here's your food, see you later. It's more about the connection, sharing a meal, because when you actually share a meal with someone, it brings up the human connection. That's when the stories start. You know, people feel comfortable, they relax, they open up. Then we can see how we can help, or if they just want to vent. So we actively listen to the people that we're helping. And, yeah, I'm really passionate about a strong support network and the sense of community and belonging, because a lot of the people we help feel like, well, again, they've had past traumas where they've been neglected and there's addictions and domestic violence and homelessness, and there's so many different situations where they just don't feel like they belong anywhere. But even yesterday, and we hear this a lot, the services that came in said, wow, this just feels different to all the other services that are around. Not bagging them out.
No,
but
not at all.
Because we're a smaller organisation, I feel that we're right there on the ground level with people. So with the human connection and understanding that we bring, and the lovingly made meals, because food tastes different when you make it with love.
Yeah.
You know, so everything we do is for the benefit of the community, and we provide, every Monday we provide bacon and egg rolls, because that's a bit special for people.
Yeah,
so we provide bacon and egg rolls on a Monday in Globe Lane, and previous to that, we had a mobile coffee van. So I had the council call me and say, we'd like to move some people from this area to this area. Currently where they are, they have access to $1 coffee. So we'd like them to move to this area and to be able to access $1 coffee. Can you put a coffee van in there and charge $1 for the coffee? And I thought, oh gosh, for starters, I don't have a coffee van. I don't even drink coffee. But I thought, these are the people. These are the people that I want to get to, because I feel that I can be wherever I need to be. I'm a bit of a chameleon when it comes to connecting with people. I can see where they're up to in their life. I can really understand and be wherever they are to help them physically, mentally, to help them. And when the council called me, I said that to them, these are the people I want to help. But when they called, it was actually a couple of weeks after I went through a domestic violence situation at the end of my 22 years of marriage. Never been in that situation before. There was a situation and it was the worst night of my life, and I thought I was going to die. The police came, it was a whole thing. I was battered and bruised, mentally and physically. And so I said to the council lady, Angela, I said, I've just got a few things on at the moment, but these are the people I really want to help. Just leave it with me and I'll get back to you. So a couple of weeks after that, I had a meeting with her and I made a phone call to someone that I knew who had a coffee van. And I said to him, I've got this opportunity. I really want to help these people. And he actually said, I've got two coffee vans and one we don't use during the week. We only use it on the weekends. So wow. You can use that if you want. And I thought, wow, this is so meant to be. So meant to be. So we had a crash course in making coffee and we started going into Globe Lane for 5 days a week for around 3 or 4 years and built up the relationships with the people that I wanted to help. So it went from, no joke, the first day that we went in there, someone got stabbed.
Wow.
And during the next year, there was nearly every day, there was all in brawls and there was fights and there was yelling and screaming and dealing drugs and drinking alcohol. And I thought, oh my gosh, what have I got myself into here? But we hung in there. We worked with the people. They actually thought I was an undercover cop at first. And so we've worked with those people. We had planting sessions. So we'd plant the garden in that area. And we had, for a whole year, we had a hairdresser that would open up her salon every 6 weeks or so and cut hair for free, which was such a treat because some of these people hadn't had a haircut or been to a hairdresser for 25 years.
And I guess people in society sometimes judge others by their appearance.
That's right.
So helping them in this area, not just a coffee, can help enormously.
Absolutely. Then what started to happen was, which we've seen in different situations, people can feel a bit entitled. So it started off by, yeah, just come in and get your hair cut, sit in the fancy massage chair, have a wash and a trim, to them turning up at the hairdresser saying, I need you to blow dry my hair because my hair's wet, when they were with other clients. So I thought, oh, okay, this is a lesson in social, what's the word, socially acceptable behaviour, which, again, no judgement, they haven't been taught these skills.
And sometimes we can all forget things if we're not part of a certain group or area of society.
That's right. So they're in their own little world over here and then mingling in with, inverted commas, normal people and situations, just had no idea. So we put in place a bit of a contract that you only go in when it's your allocated time, because in the beginning there was no time slots. So then we had to bring in the time slot because it was a case of, well, they had their hair done last time, I want mine done. So it turned into a bit of a thing. But with the guidance that we provided, it was come in on your time slot. You don't go in unless it's in that particular time. Talk to me if you need to, if there's anything to do with the hair cutting, talk to me. Don't go in there. You don't need to do that. And there was a couple of other conditions they had to sign off on. And then the last one was, because someone's doing something nice for me, I'm going to return the favour and pay it forward and do something nice for someone else. So we kind of, it really changed the dynamic of it all. And to see the people walk out of that hairdressing salon, just, you know, they would walk in down and, you know, when you're depressed and down, everything's down, your head's down, your shoulders are down. But when they would walk out, you know, they'd get the compliments, oh, wow, your hair looks great. And they would really stand with confidence. So it changed a lot. So we did that for a year and then COVID happened and we weren't in Wollongong as often, and what we were doing was doing events outside of Globe Lane to raise money to fund what we were doing. So the events, the outside events stopped, and it was costing us more than we could manage. So we decided to sell the coffee van. So that was sold. And I thought, I don't want people to think, okay, see you later, that's it. So we found a bit of a gap that there wasn't a breakfast available for that demographic. So we thought, right, let's create a breakfast program. So 2023, we started the Breakfast Buddies. So every Monday we now load up the van, and with the barbecues and the tables and the gas bottles and everything we need to provide these bacon and egg rolls. And this last year, we've provided 3,660 bacon and egg rolls. Wow. And the people are starving. Sometimes they'll have three. They're so hungry because there are some services available on Saturday, but as far as I know, there's nothing on a Sunday. So some people go without food for Sunday. And then, you know, it's about bringing people together and showing that people do care. And we care about them. You know, some of these people, they won't, you know, have the, you know, like the dream life by getting the house and the job. But we're on the ground level with them, and we nurture their mental health. And I know that that has a ripple effect into the rest of their day and their lives. So we also provide the community lunch every Thursday. And in the last year, we've provided 2,780 meals.
Crazy number.
Yeah, and 750 food gifts. So that's non-perishable food gifts that we also give out at the community lunches. So we also, on a case-by-case basis, we advocate for people, speak up for the person who doesn't have a voice, which is how I believe I would have felt in that 1 month, first 1 month of my life. So there's also regular phone calls to check in with people, see how they're going. And we've helped people move to safer accommodation as well. And we even held a wedding at our community lunch. That was so amazing. It was a couple who, they've got to be in their high 60s. And they always wanted to get married. So we had the minister come in. It was a commitment ceremony, not an official wedding. But, you know, we had different businesses provide some decorations for the tables, and there was a big flower arch, and it was so cool. It was the most amazing. So we do go above and beyond. And again, it's on a case-by-case basis. We're not in the wedding planning business. We have had other people say, now I'd like to get married. And I thought, we're not going to get into that. But thank you. And it was that well-received that people wanted to be a part of that as well.
Yeah,
but we really try and stick to food. Because I have a lot of phone calls for, you know, I've got a bed that I want to give, or I've got all these clothes. We did start to give out clothes. And really, unless we know someone who needs XYZ, then we will take those items. But we just don't have the storage or the people power to go and pick up all the different bits. And so we do stick to food. That's our main objective.
And the size of the organisation over these last 13 years, what is the size? And it seems from our conversation so far that you sort of evolve and help different parts of the Illawarra, but where are you helping people in the Illawarra at the moment?
So we're mainly Bulleye to Wollongong and Berkeley, kind of that, as far as around Berkeley. But we have had people come from Nowra, services from Nowra coming to us to get some food for people they're working with.
In your social media, you talk about the team quite a bit. Who's in the team and how many people are there?
We have around 10 core volunteers who are consistent. They turn up at every event, but there's around 25 altogether. And some people work full-time, so they can't help during the week. But if we have a weekend community barbecue, they'll come and help there. Or if we have an awareness campaign, they can do things like that. But it's around 10 really core volunteers, and we have a volunteer coordinator as well.
And you spoke before that I guess you're in the middle of, when you introduced that coffee van, of your own trauma or your own serious event.
Yep.
And then that initial period was violent. How do you, and I know you're the leader, but there's others, but how do you guys go with the ups and downs of what you're sort of seeing, because it can impact you in a positive and negative way. Mm. So how do you guys manage that sort of environment that can be sort of volatile?
Well, our volunteer coordinator, who is KP, who's actually my wife, so we work together, we debrief every day. We analyse, we pull apart, we've got really good communication. So, and it seems to be if one of us is down, the other one's up, and we can help to lift the other one up. So that's how we manage it, really. And there's boundaries that we've put in place as well. Because at one stage I was getting phone calls at 11 o'clock at night, and one situation that stands out was it was a Friday night around 7 o'clock. I was in my backyard, had the fire pit going, we had the chickens at that time and they were out in the yard, and I had the kids playing outside, and it was one of our favourite things to do. And I had a phone call from someone who said that his ex had dropped the kids off to him and he had nothing to feed them. And I thought that was a turning point for me, because I thought, what, how can I help this person? I need to have time with my own family and nurture them. Not that I didn't care about him, but it was a time where I put boundaries in place where, you know, it's 9 to 5 with answering the phone.
Yep.
And so I just suggested a few things to him and said for him to come back during the week to get some food to help out, to potentially store in the cupboard if that situation comes up again.
And the rest of the team, is that what you as a group do, that you continually talk to each other day to day, week to week, to sort of, if there isn't an event or something transpired, that everyone talks about it to make sure we're all okay?
Yes, definitely. We have regular volunteer meetings and we have catch-ups. We've actually got one tomorrow where we get to know our volunteers on a personal level so they are comfortable with sharing. And there's been a lot of situations where they've said, I really need to talk to you. I didn't know how to handle this situation, or this happened. Did I do the right thing? Was that okay? But we always say, if you feel like you're in a tricky situation, pass the buck to us and we will help to manage the situation. But we're definitely, we debrief regularly, regular meetings, regular catch-ups.
It seems to me, over the several episodes when I'm talking to people in these types of organisations, that the volunteers or the people themselves need a safe space to talk to each other about what they do or their energy levels or their emotional levels. So that's important, isn't it?
It definitely is. And we also have training sessions as well throughout the year about trauma and things like that, so people can understand why someone might react the way they do, because there's all different kinds of trauma that pretty much everyone in general and the people that we help have been through, which can cause them to respond or react in a certain way. So we do have training sessions for the volunteers as well.
Without impacting on anyone's privacy, can you please tell the listener about a couple of positive stories which exemplify what Need a Feed does in the region?
Well, actually, a story came up yesterday where one of our guests, when he first came into our space, he was aggressive, threatening, demanding food, and it was quite confronting. And he had a really big attitude of entitlement. He's been on and off drugs, he's been in gangs, he's covered in tattoos, he's got a bald head. So people can look at people like that and judge straight away. So yeah, he's been in and out of jail. He's a pretty hardcore kind of fellow. But there was one time where he came in and he was really heightened, like I said, and we were able to listen to his concerns, actively listen, and calm him down. And fast forward to yesterday, he now comes in early to our lunch and helps us set the tables up, and he helps us pack up as well. And he started coming in regularly to the lunch. He has been taking medication, So he also said that when he now sees us, he feels calm. And I don't like the word trigger, but it's like he just takes himself back to that situation where obviously people judge him and don't understand him. He's been through a lot of trauma. Doesn't make the behavior okay, but we really understand. And if you can listen to understand, not listen to respond and react, you know, it makes all the difference. It makes all the difference. So yeah, he feels calm now when he comes in to see us. And yesterday he actually helped us set up. Then he went home and got changed. He said, "I got changed for you girls." And you know, he had a collared shirt on and he was engaging with the services. He knew some of them and it was so nice. It was really nice to hear and see him mingling and less threatening. And people were engaging with him. So I know that we make a real life difference to so many people.
It must be proud for yourself and the other people involved in Need a Feed, because you must have hundreds of stories like that where over a period of time you do see a transformation. And although it might be basic in terms of what you provide, that support, whether it be with food or mentally or just listening, does make a difference, doesn't it?
It does, because people feel heard where sometimes they just don't feel heard and no one understands them. So that's what I'm really proud of, that Need a Feed has evolved into that safe space for people where they do feel heard. They don't feel invisible. And, you know, a lot of the people have been lost in the system. So we really do our best with the resources and volunteers that we have to make that kind of difference in people's lives.
For yourself personally, what drives you in the role that you undertake for Need a Feed?
Well, like I said, the Need a Feed story started when I was 1 month old. So it's thinking about those times and the domestic violence situation and different choices that I've made, and just being there to understand and know that I appreciated my family at that time. And if I didn't have my family, I could have been one of those people who were living in their car, because there was lots of forks in the road after the night, going to court, legal side of things and everything that went along with that. And then we sold our house, and if I didn't have a supportive family, I actually don't know where I would have gone with my three kids and a dog. So my mum and dad took us in for about 10 months so I could get my head together, because there was times where I couldn't even get out of bed and I was so depressed. I was so anxious that there was times where I physically vomited. So all these situations happened for me, not to me. So now I can understand where they might be up to, the people that we're helping. And that really drives me, because I just know how important it is to feel heard and have someone there who's got your back and understands. You know, we might say the same thing 20 times to someone and nothing changes. Then it might be the 21st time where it might be said a different way, or they just hear it when they're ready to hear it, and then we can work with them. So we're consistent, we're dedicated, and we're there for the people. And that drives me, because I can talk to the homeless person, I can talk to the chief inspector of police, and I'm the same person. I just believe that this is what I'm meant to be doing, and it motivates me to know that, oh, that person feels so heard and they feel really good after I've spoken to them. That keeps me going.
So that fuels you each day that you get those sort of interactions.
Yeah, I love chatting with the people. I love it. I love it. But it doesn't mean that sometimes it's not really heavy and I think, oh, I know what you need to do, but they might just not be ready for it. But it really empowers me to know that they know that I get them. You know, I really get where they're up to and I'm there for them.
Well, I guess that's extremely important. With yourself and you spoke of your partner before, you must have, in these 13 years, have evolved in terms of your skill set, because already in this interview you've spoken about stakeholder engagement in terms of various organisations or people that you deal with, like a chief inspector or a homeless person, and as well as that, the, I guess, you know, managing an organisation where you're dealing with not the people that you just feed, but the volunteers, the financial side of it. So how have you seen your skill set change and sort of adapt in these 13 years?
Well, the organisation's grown organically. So when different situations come up, I will find out how to manage that situation, whether it's going to a course or listening to a podcast or just developing my skills along the way. You know, because when I started, I didn't have a big business plan. It was just I knew what I wanted to do, and I believe if the why is strong enough, the how will work itself out. So that's what I do.
What are the hurdles you face as an organisation, and how have you overcome these hurdles, or what do you do when they come up?
Well, like I said, sometimes people aren't ready to make a change in their own life. So that's challenging, because I can see what they need to do. So we're just there to listen and meet them where they are mentally and physically. And we are just there for people. I think it's about the communication and the debriefing regularly that helps us to get through, really.
You spoke before about that human connection, which is a core part of Need to Feed. Do you think a lot of that comes from your personality, that you spoke about your subconscious before in those first 30 days of your life, and over the course of, maybe it was always inside you, but that need to connect is why Need to Feed has been successful in its outcomes?
Yeah, I do. Because definitely human connection is so important. It's so important.
If a person or company wants to get involved or help, what's the best way they can do that?
Well, we're actually community funded. We're not funded by the government. So we rely on grants and private donations to keep doing what we do. So we're always looking at different options of how can we raise money. You know, we do have business sponsors, so which a couple of spots have opened up for. So I'd love to hear from anyone who wants to get involved in that way, and then we can go from there and I can send them the sponsorship opportunities. There's also on the website, which is in the middle of being revamped, there's a donation button. And I would love to see people, you know, sacrifice a coffee a week and set up a regular donation to Need to Feed.
So you can hit the donation button on the website. Is there other ways that they can help or donate?
Yeah, businesses can sponsor our breakfast buddies or any events that are coming up. And also with the social media side of things, we're pretty active. So if people can share, like, and follow and help us spread the word about what we're doing, that would be amazing. I'd be so grateful for that.
And so Instagram, Facebook, you're on those platforms?
Yes, we are.
Can that be a source of frustration at times, that if you want to do a task or an event or do more, that you're unable to because of a financial constraint?
Yeah, it is frustrating. But over the last 13 years, there's been so many amazing things that have happened where I still think, wow, I can't even believe that happened. There's a story of, I think it was last year, we had a back-to-school community barbecue and someone had promised backpacks with all the gear, you know, the books and the pencil cases in the backpacks, water bottle, the whole bit. And when it came close to the event, I contacted that person and said, okay, the barbecue's coming up, can we come and pick up the backpacks? And they said, I've actually already given them out. And I thought, no. So when I got that email, I was driving with my mum somewhere. I wasn't driving. She was driving. And I got the email and I thought, okay, we'll just work it out. We will buy some backpacks. We'll work it out. It'll work out. And by the time we're on our way home, I actually had an email from the manager of Surf, Dive and Ski in three locations who said every year in December, we donate the amount of backpacks that we have sold to an organization and we'd like to give them to Wow. Need a Feed. And I could not believe it. It was that quick. So the universe has got our back and we provided 60 backpacks. And then I was contacted by, I think it was Bulleye Workers Club and a couple of other community type organizations who I didn't even know, but they'd been collecting the drink bottles and the pencil cases and pens. So it was even, and they were all branded, you know, branded Billabong bags and Quicksilver.
It's important for the people these days.
Yeah, so it was so special. And there's been so many occasions like that. And that just reminds me that I am doing what I'm meant to be doing.
Where do you see Need a Feed in the next few years?
Well, our goal at the moment is we are raising money for a food van. So we know where the pockets of need are throughout the Illawarra. So our goal is to fundraise for a food truck so we can meet people physically and mentally where they are. Instead of them, you know, some people feel safe where they are and they don't venture out. So that is our goal at the moment. So we have a big fundraiser coming up. We're partnering with the Lions Club in Fig Tree. It's the Need a Feed Swim Challenge. So that will be happening in September so we can raise money for this food truck.
Well, for myself and the listeners of Veins of the Illawarra, it's been an absolute privilege to listen about Need a Feed and your journey, Shaz. It's just an honour. So thank you very much for being part of the podcast.
Thank you, Travis. That's so nice.
Sincere thanks to the remarkable Shaz and Need a Feed for being part of this podcast. If you wish to donate, please visit their website, www.needafeed.org, and click on the donate button. Or if there are business sponsors that want to help fund Need a Feed events or programs, please direct message Shaz via their Facebook or Instagram pages. Thanks for listening to Veins of the Illawarra. I do appreciate your support. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a comment or a review. I'm your host, Travis. Goodbye.